This is New Mexico Filmworks.
Welcome to Talk 1260 KTRC. This is Toby Ives, and you're listening to New Mexico Filmworks. Today we have a great show. We're going to talk with Barbara Jerome from the IATSE Local 600, which is the Camera Guild, the Western Regional Business Representative. We'll also be talking with Dawn Gray, our New Mexico Film Office Locations Coordinator. And later on in the show, we'll talk with Helen Caldwell, a script supervisor, and John Armijo, who will give us a little film history, New Mexico film history. Thank you, Barbara, so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So, you know, tell us a little bit about what the Camera Guild's mission is, where you're based, which states you have jurisdiction over.
Well, our official title is the International Cinematographers Guild Local 600 of the IATSE, and we cover the 50 United States and Puerto Rico. So we are, you know, we have offices in various areas. Our headquarters is Los Angeles, California, and that's the office that I work out of, and we have several camera reps here. We also have an office in Chicago and another in Louisiana for the Central Region members, and Miami, Florida, as well as New York.
Is it correct to say that New Mexico is the Western region and is included in, has 12 other states in that region?
That
as
is
well?
Correct. Okay. New Mexico is one of the 13 Western states, and so the membership there called the LA office, and I am the rep who handles that area.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about the mission of the Guild.
Well, obviously, as a union, it is our desire to represent everybody working in this craft. We represent directors of photography, camera operators, first and second assistants, camera utilities, loaders, digital utility persons, digital imaging technicians, and about 9 years ago now, the publicists union was merged into our local. So
it's
still
that.
Photographers. Oh yes, we cover several crafts, all with common interests.
Now, would it be fair to say for and maybe this applies to all IATSE locals that your job is part of your mission, I should say, is to protect the rights of those working on productions, not necessarily to help them with employment?
That's absolutely correct. We are there. I'll tell you, I spend a great deal of my time dealing with safety issues, and, you know, enforcing the terms and conditions of our collective bargaining agreement. I think it's safe to say that the goal of most unions, ours included, is to make sure that everyone, every worker, has the right to stand up for themselves with assistance. Because, you know, standing alone as a small individual against a grander employer is very difficult to do. So the unions are there to take care of the rights of the worker, we organize the non-union and protect their rights once they're under a collective bargaining agreement, provide them with health and pension benefits, which is one of the best things that we can do for our membership, and just in general protect them so they don't have to go toe-to-toe with their employer, which, as we all know, is very difficult.
Right, right. And so you had mentioned several of the positions in which, 600 covers.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost sounded to me that you mentioned them in the hierarchical format. Is that?
Pretty much, yes.
Yeah. So, film unions, it varies. How you have more than one position or move up in a position, can you only be one particular job position under this union?
Yes. One works in a particular classification, and that's the classification that they have registered with the Guild. And moving up can be a process. I would say that people are better off taking their time moving up and really learning. You know, if you come in as a loader, obviously, as you are working as a loader, you're learning also the skills of a second AC. And that's, I always recommend people take their time. Sometimes people want to rush it a bit, but I say when you go to the next classification, you want to do a gangbuster job.
Right.
You never want to take a position that you're really not comfortable with and where you may make a misstep, because being in the camera part, everything you do is crucial, and mistakes can cost an entire day of, of wages and all the ancillary costs to the producer.
Mm-hmm.
And we want the producer to get his project, get it timely, and, you know, with the least amount of mistakes. So the camera part of it is crucial. And we try to encourage our people to really learn. We do a lot of training.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I brought training programs to New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So that we keep our members at the forefront of all the new technology. That all impacts 600 more than any other union.
I was just going to say that there is a different kind of level of the technical aspects, because
yes,
it does change a lot, and you would have to keep up on that. I mean, you know, I'm not a technical person, and I'll have 600 members come in and they'll start telling me about the latest camera or the
yeah,
wing ding that goes in this thing and goes over there and does this. And
it's like a foreign language.
Right. All I know is that, does that mean, you know, when someone's on camera, you're going to see more of their pores on their face? That's what I ask. You know. But
the actors ask.
Well, exactly. So I'm very, it must be difficult to keep up in that technology. And I know you said you had a lot of training.
Yeah.
Do you foresee more training out in New Mexico for that?
Absolutely. I'm always pushing for that. As I say, you know, we've got the 50 states and Puerto Rico, but our New Mexican members are welcome to come to training in other states.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when we had one of our trainings in, I think it was our Mega Digital,
mm-hmm, I remember
training,
that.
You were there, and I think we had six of, at that time, state-of-the-art cameras,
right,
which, and many of them have disappeared as they've been replaced with a new model.
Yeah.
We had mainly our New Mexican members there, but we did find people from other states coming and joining us,
mm-hmm,
which is kind of nice. It means that since we are such a large organization, our membership gets to network in other states.
Now,
so,
how many members do you have overall, not just in New Mexico?
We have approximately, I think it's just under 7,000.
Wow. And that's the 50 states in Puerto Rico?
That is correct.
And maybe I'm putting you on the spot here, but do you know how many members are in your western states?
The vast majority are in the western region, and in your state in particular, we are hovering around 70.
Okay, great, great.
Yeah.
And I imagine you tend to have contracts with most of the productions in New Mexico. Would that be true?
Yes, we do.
Or
yeah,
is there a, can I ask if that is based on budget, or how is that determined?
There are certain budgets where they are so small that they can't afford to pay health and pension.
Mm-hmm.
And we cannot have a contract that doesn't include those two things.
Okay.
There are other things that we can work with, and we do all the time. We do a lot of low budget in New Mexico. And we address some terms and conditions, nothing to do with safety, but, you know, there's wiggle room on some other terms and conditions. And, of course, the rates are tiered to address those projects to make them doable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not our job to stop a project from being made. We just want it made union. And so we know that we do actually have a symbiotic relationship with the producers.
That's great.
We want to get their project done, and we want to take care of our members, and so we work very hard to do that.
Now, because of the, it's very a specific way in which you move up or are re-rated, I think is one term,
mm-hmm,
used.
That's right.
If someone in New Mexico would like to join 600, perhaps they've done some student films in one of the positions mentioned, or they're aspiring to move from, say, the grip department into the camera department, what would you recommend the best way to do that? What do they need to provide 600 to join? And when is the right timing for someone to join the union?
Except for a couple of the newer digital positions, there is an industry experience roster that is required by the producers that one has to get placed upon. And that's through Contract Services Administration Trust Fund, and that is the group that is paid by the producers to administer the roster.
Mm-hmm.
They also do safety training. And there again, that's funded by the producers. So except for digital utility, which is someone who wrangles cables, or the digital imaging technician, which is the individual who assists the director in photography in creating the look and deals with color and things like that, those two positions are not rostered. But your traditional positions of loader, AC, operator, director of photography, you do have to be on the industry experience roster. And we have employees, three of them actually, in member services here to assist those folks who are interested in getting placed on the roster. So they're really terrific, nice young folk, and anybody who wants to can give them a call, and we will send them information on how to get on the roster, answer questions for them. We are pretty much their advocate. Two contract services, they can be a little, you know, they've got so much on their plate with all the various locals that it's hard for them to spend time, and they can get perhaps a little impatient. So we will walk people through the steps and guide them to get on the roster, which then enables them to work in the 13 Western states.
Okay.
And, yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but Barbara, what is your contact information if someone wanted to talk to the membership group there?
They should dial 323-876-0160 and ask for member services.
And to your website, real quick, Barbara?
Is cameradillguild.com.
Great. And thanks so much for joining us today, Barbara.
Pleasure.
You're listening to Talk 1260 Radio, and we'll be back with Don Gray.
This must be the price you pay.
Welcome back. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC. I'm your host, Toby Ives, and this is NM Filmworks. With us now, we have Don Gray, our location coordinator for the New Mexico Film Office. Hi, Don.
Hi, Toby.
How are you doing?
Good.
Glad to have you back again. So this week, you know, maybe you can talk about a couple things. We have a locations tab on the New Mexico Film Office website, which is nmfilm.com. And there you're going to find, you know, how to search for locations. You're going to find state buildings, how to get permits. We have a lot of information. And one of the things that we don't elaborate on that webpage is what location services we actually offer from the New Mexico Film Office. So when we have a production that calls us and they're wanting us to help them look for locations or just general resources, often, Don, I know that you're the first one we turn to. You might do a script breakdown and basically let the productions know what kind of locations we have available. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, part of my job is certainly the photo database is open and available to anyone who wants to go view it and search around on it. And that's one way you can go about that. On the other hand, you know, I have pretty good knowledge of the state, of logistics, of weather, of events, of travel distances. And with that knowledge, you can actually give me some parameters to work with, and I can actually glean from our photo database some ideas for you about locations here in New Mexico. And also can maybe suggest things that aren't necessarily obvious. You know, if you're searching by a keyword in the database because you're looking for something specific, I might know of something similar or that could actually step in and fill the role that you wouldn't necessarily pull up with a keyword search. So that's kind of part of what I bring to the table is you give me your story, your script, I break it down, we look at the locations, and I can put together a package that becomes an online photo package viewable by you, the client, that has ideas for all of the locations that are in your script.
And one of the things I know that we, you know, it's going to vary from production to production, but we want to qualify when a production is ready for those services. I mean, you know, sometimes a production might be, or a project may be in too early of a development stage. And we might start something like even broader with a synopsis, or do we have a more general location? Would that be true?
Yeah, sure. I mean, and what I usually tell the client is that I'll work with as little or as much information as you want to provide me with.
Right.
So if you want to just give me some sort of vague ideas about what you think you're looking for, you know, I'll go dig up some photos based on that. I do think you get a better product, you get a better photo package, the more information you can give me, the further along you are in your process. But, you know, there are different reasons to have location packages generated. Sometimes it's actually specifically to find locations. Sometimes it's because somebody might actually be pitching New Mexico as the place to make the movie, and it might be kind of early on in the production and in their status, and so they want some photographs to be able to show and to have the to start the discussion with the money people about how New Mexico might actually be a good choice. And that might be early on. It might be before you have a lot of real specific information. So we're happy to generate those as well because, you know, we want you to come here or at least consider us.
Right. And that's great information for a potential client to provide us. You know, we want to know where you are in the stage so we know what kind of context to give you and how much time to dedicate to that.
Sure.
And, you know, one thing is that we get a lot of requests, as you know, Don. You know, at what point can we actually scout with a client? Or at what point do we need to say, hey, you need to find a local scout? I know that it's not that black and white, but can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, it's an important distinction because, of course, the New Mexico Film Office falls under economic development in the state of New Mexico. Our job is to get jobs for New Mexicans and to get industry built in New Mexico. That's our job. That's why we fall under that department. So we want to get people working, and we don't want to be performing jobs that can be performed by other people who could be hired to do them. So my job is to get the interest, to pique the interest, to have people think about coming and visiting us and doing a tour. And oftentimes I do the first tour around where I sort of do a fam tour, mm-hmm. show them some of the locations they've maybe seen in the photo packages that they like, that sort of thing. Get the fish on the hook, as it were. But we are very careful in that we don't want to be replacing an actual job. And there is a job of a location scout and a location manager. And when it starts to get down to specific information about what can we do here, what would the contract would look like, how much will it cost, those sorts of information, that's the point at which we hand the job over to somebody here on the ground and actually create a job here for that particular film company.
Yeah, and in addition to that, what we have, the location photographs we have in our database are what we present. So when a production wants to us to find a location, sometimes that is when we say, hey, you know, you really need to hire someone. Can you talk a little bit about that distinction?
Yeah, I mean, if it's something that I think actually we should have in our database, I might go out and shoot it. I mean, the database is your showroom of models of cars, if you were in that used car analogy or that car salesman analogy. The more inventory we have, the better. And we have one of the largest location and photo databases of film commissions in the world, actually. But it's never going to be completely comprehensive. There's no way we're ever going to be able to have every location availability in the state. But if it's something that I think we need that's fairly that we need in our database and it's fairly integral to actually getting the project here, then I might actually go out and shoot it. But when you start to really get down into the nitty-gritty details of things, that's the point at which you need somebody actually dedicated to the task. We were joking earlier this morning, Toby, you and I, about sometimes people have such specific location mm-hmm. needs where they need a home with a gate and a long driveway and an aerial antenna. You know, when you start to dig down into right. those sorts of nitty-gritties of location, that's when you have to have boots on the ground. You have to send somebody out, hire somebody, and send them out to look for some very, very specific thing.
And we're lucky that we do have a network of state film liaisons around the state, because I know that when we don't have the ability to get that shot right away, or we know there might be something in a certain area, we do have people elsewhere on the ground that are often associated with governmental entities that can get that photo for us. You know, sometimes it's quicker in some areas than others, as you know, but that's a great resource too. And we can find certain locations, like you said, if we think they may exist or have someone else that can get that photograph for us.
That's right. And we also do have an extremely healthy base of folks here in New Mexico whose jobs were created by the film industry, location scouts, location managers, people here who live here, residents here who can be hired to actually perform those tasks as well once it starts to get down to to some more specific information.
Right. And can you briefly tell, and this is a little bit of a digression, but it made me think of, you know, what a location scout is. It's not a photographer. So when you say we have those people on the ground, it's still specific to the industry and not necessarily specific to photography.
Right, exactly. You're right. I mean, the ability to come back with good location photographs is absolutely key. What I tell people who are inquiring is that, you know, a bad photograph is a bad location in the minds of a filmmaker. You need to have good representative photographs. They need to be fairly comprehensive. So not only do you see what the building looks like, for example, but also what surrounds it, what's in the immediate area, and also a good working knowledge of what it takes to make a movie is part of the role of the location scout as well. Not only if this location is appealing and we choose it, we also have to know where will we park the company? How long will it take to get there?
Don, I'm going to have to interrupt you because I know that will take us into a whole other segment, and I'm going to have you back so we can talk about that. But please go to our website at nmfilm.com. You can look in the locations department or list your property. You're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC, and we'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to NM Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC. Next up, we have script supervisor Helen Caldwell. Helen, welcome to the show. Thank you for being here.
Pleasure to be here.
Now, Helen, you have quite a long list of credits. It seems that you've been doing script supervising for, I would say, would I be right to say close to 30 years?
29 years. My 30th year in March.
Wow, congratulations. That's really impressive. Now, I know you've done, you've worked, it seems like, a lot of places in the world.
Yes.
And but you've done quite a number of films and televisions and every type of, actually, medium in the industry. In New Mexico, too.
Yes.
Are you from New Mexico?
I'm originally from Peoria, Illinois.
Okay.
I got in the business in California. I moved to California, started my own business, and John Cassavetes became one of my clients.
Oh, wow.
And he took a liking to me and took me under his wing and offered me my first job. And I said, you got to be crazy. I've never been on a movie set in my life. And he said, you're smart. I'll teach you. You'll learn.
Wow. Well, he must have seen something special in you because that's not an easy position.
No, it isn't. But I had an advantage with John because he took me in the cutting room. First, he introduced me to the top script supervisor in Hollywood at the time, Marshall Schlamm, and hooked me up with an editor, George Villaseñor, who was the editor on my very first film. And they took me in the cutting room. We were cutting on a moviola back at those days. And he taught me how film cuts together and why continuity is important and when it's important, when it's not important.
And that's a unique opportunity because that's not how people are trained any longer.
Unfortunately.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well,
it was a unique opportunity.
Exactly.
If anybody who wants to be a script supervisor, if you can spend time in the cutting room, it's definitely valuable.
I would imagine that gave you a very unique perspective.
Yes.
So that's great. Now, I would imagine, and I'm guessing here, that it must have been a film that brought you to New Mexico to say, hey, I want to stay in New Mexico before the whole burgeoning industry here.
Actually not.
No?
I came here because I wanted to try to get something of my own in the can.
Ah.
I was trying to do a documentary about Native American elders. And a couple of friends of mine in California had worked with someone in northern New Mexico who was going to connect me with different elders to interview. And so I went up there and rented this little house and ended up adopting a lot of animals. This was in 1996. And you know how out in the country people dump their animals. So then the house went in foreclosure and I had 8 animals and I had no place to go. So I bought it. So that's really kind of how I ended up here. I bought a house for my animals.
Now, did you get that documentary completed?
I did not. No. I tried to do several documentaries. I finally realized I had to admit I'm not a producer. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do that part.
Right.
And I gave up and said, I just want to make it to retirement.
Right. And so then you kind of segued back into the role of a script supervisor.
I never left the role of a script supervisor.
Okay, so
I was doing this
that.
On my spare time in between shows. And,
wow.
Yeah.
And so can you talk a little bit about, like, if, to someone that's not familiar, what a script supervisor does, what the role is of a script supervisor on a film, for instance?
Multidimensional. Yeah. First, you don't shoot the film in order. You shoot at, like, all the scenes in the bedroom are shot at the same time. All the scenes in the kitchen are shot at the same time. In the story, the first scene might be day one. The second scene might be 2 weeks later. But you shoot it all on the same day at the same time. So the script supervisor keeps track of the storyline, keeps track of what wardrobe should they be in, what props should they have, what hairdo are they wearing. I keep track of all the other departments, even though each department keeps their own continuity. Mm-hmm. The script supervisor is like a stopgap to help catch because everybody's working so fast and hard. And
right.
You work long days, so everybody's tired. Mistakes can happen, and we kind of cover each other's backs that way. And you also keep track of every single shot, what lens is on the camera, what the shot is, how many takes were done, what got printed, what didn't get printed, why didn't it get printed. You keep a script. You line the script for the editor. So you work very closely with the editor, and all my work goes to the editor, and they use that, the book that I create, mm-hmm. called the Bible, in the cutting room. And you also keep track of making sure the actors don't drop any lines or they don't ad-lib any lines that are inappropriate for that point in the storyline. And, it's a very multidimensional job.
Now, it would seem to me that you are acting as a part of the director's brain, if you will, because the director also needs that full kind of comprehension of what's happening. And so I'm assuming the director defers to the script supervisors quite a bit, and you have to also jump in. No, I don't know of another position on set that could say, stop the shot, outside of the director.
Well, rarely do we say stop the shot.
Yeah.
I never call a cut. However, I sit right next to the director, and I'm in, I work very closely with the director, the DP, and the actors. And so, it is up to me to bring it up to him. If I don't think he has enough coverage or if I think he's missing a shot, I can just mention it to him. Did you want to get this shot? And sometimes they hadn't thought of it, and sometimes they have, And so
right.
You kind of walk a thin line. It's a collaboration, of course,
Right.
If I think that they're doing something that won't cut, mm-hmm. I mention it to the director and the DP. They have the option of saying, no, we don't care, we're going to do it this way anyway, which sometimes the most creative things happen because you break the rules.
Right.
And in filmmaking, you can break the rules, and that's part of the job, learning the job, is knowing when you can break the rules, how to break the rules, and how not to break the rules. And if I think it's a serious issue that is a cutting problem and they disagree with me, I don't get into a fight with them.
Right.
I just put it in the script notes to the editor, advised director, or director advised and approved, and they, that way they know I brought it up. The director said it didn't bother him and that he wanted to do it this way.
Right.
So that way I kind of cover my back and nobody comes back to me and goes, why didn't you catch this?
Well, right. And I it's interesting you say it's a fine line, because you don't want to overstep your boundaries.
But
at the same time, you want to say, I brought that up, and she's wearing a purple coat, and it was a blue coat, or
Yeah, and sometimes things like that happen.
Yeah,
but realize also in the cutting room, sometimes you'll shoot something. In Ace Ventura, When Nature Calls, is a perfect example. There's a scene where he confronts the character at the end over a chessboard, and they double cut it. And when the actor is doing his scene, you might do several takes, and
right.
he might change the action. On one take, he might sweep the chess pieces off at a certain point, and the next take, he waits another two lines.
Right.
And they double cut it, so you see him sweep the chess pieces away, and then when we cut back to the guy, the chess pieces are all set up again. and that's something they do in the cutting room, that they're willing to accept the continuity error because the performance was better.
Well, and it's interesting because, I would imagine in someone like Jim Carrey in a movie like that, there's a lot of ad-libbing, and that's then you have to be aware of the actor-director relationship and, versus a different movie.
Jim Carrey's a genius.
Yeah.
He is really just a remarkable human being, an actor. He's very, very, very sharp, and he knows. He can do 12 takes and do something different on each take, and he will remember exactly what he did on each take.
That's amazing.
He really is a remarkable actor and a fun guy to work with. Just a really nice person.
Well, I have to say he's one of my favorites, so I'm always glad to hear that. Yeah. I don't want to ever hear the bad stories about, you know, the things you don't know, the public image, you know. Don't ruin it for me.
There's not too many bad stories in my repertoire.
So, you know, talking about being sharp, I mean, that's something, you know, a script supervisor has to have a similar ability
yes.
to, you know, as remembering what happened where. And not everyone can be a script supervisor. To me, it would be a certain personality. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, my background, I was a secretary. Mm-hmm. So I come from a background of having to keep a lot of things organized and keeping a lot of balls in the air. And I think, you know, you need to have an aptitude for that. You have to have an aptitude where you're able to multitask at the same time and have many things at one time. And you have to have I hate to say this, but I do have a very good memory. I have like a photographic memory. Mm-hmm. I can remember a lot of stuff that I never have to write down because I just remember it. But I also take shorthand, and that's an advantage as a script supervisor. When somebody ad-libs, I can catch it real quick. And,
right.
And, you know, of course, when I get done with a page, there's a million notes on that page. I send the editor a nice clean script so he doesn't see what I did to it.
So you have to spend time probably at the end of the day, you know, keep it, getting that in order and make sure you're translating your shorthand or whatever you need so that communication is done
properly. That as I go.
Oh, you can. Okay.
Yeah, I'm one of those script supervisors that when they call rap, I want to burn rubber because
it's a long day.
You have to make copies of all your notes and turn everything in, and then you still have to go home and get prepared for the next day.
Right.
So, you know, and we work very long days. So sleep is, when I'm working, sleep is the most important thing in my life. I want to get my work done efficiently, fast. I keep up with it as I go. I don't goof off during the day. And then you want to get in bed and get 6.5 hours of sleep to get up and do it the next day.
So going back, you said you've never had to kind of jump up and say cut, right? That's nothing that you've ever had to do or come close to.
I mean, would never, never do it.
Yeah.
If I see something that's really, really wrong at the beginning of the take, I'll just say to the director, we should cut it because that's, you know, he doesn't have his glasses on or, you know, whatever. If I know it's a bust and, you know, I won't let the camera roll, I don't personally call cut.
No.
John Cassavetes trained me well. He's
right.
Script supervisor never calls cut on
right,
set.
Right.
But you're sitting right next to the director most of the time. So.
Right, right. Well, you know, and I guess, you know, being diplomatic, knowing the personalities, you know, no show is ever the same. So there is a lot of detail even in that aspect of it and the nuances. So I have to say I have a great respect for the script supervisor. In fact, I was talking to Don Gray this morning about how I used to have a really great memory. Then I had a baby. That just went out the window.
Yeah.
But, you know, I used to know all those, you know, numbers and this, and I couldn't do it. So I even have more respect. So you're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC. This is Toby Ives, and this is NM Filmworks Radio Show. We're going to be right back, and we're talking with Helen Caldwell, script supervisor. Welcome back. You're listening to New Mexico Filmworks on Talk 1260 KTRC. Thanks again, Helen, for being with us. And just to continue our conversation, we were talking about, you know, it's not an easy lifestyle, and you work long days. You want to get home and get your rest while you can. So can you talk about someone who wants to become a script supervisor? Do you have any recommendations to what to start, how to get into that, especially if you're living in New Mexico?
Well, that's kind of rough. I think the best way to get in is to apprentice with somebody mm-hmm. who's already established and knows the job very well. Rarely do you get that opportunity. The other thing you can do is take classes. I know there are some books out there. I know in Los Angeles, the local there has a mentoring program going on as well. But it's a very, very, like you said, it's a hard lifestyle, long hours, and sometimes it's long periods of time in between jobs before you work again. So you should have another source of income to keep you on your feet. It's a hard job to learn when you only get to do it, you know, 3 months out of the year. Hanging out on set and observing other script supervisors' work, if they will let you, if you're permitted to, is also a good idea if you want to try to learn the job.
So it might be that you, as a script supervisor, you might need some extra help, maybe during the show or in between the show, because someone could, is there any kind of intern you personally would do, or would be more like get some set PA experience, get some general film experience, read the books, try a local community college, try to get on some student
films. I don't
know.
I got so lucky. I just accidentally stepped into it, you know?
Yeah.
But I know for me, it was on the job learning, and and I had, you know, really a remarkable beginning in that I had people working for me. You know, they were interested in me learning this job. I think hanging out and on, if you can visit a set and visit a script supervisor, spend a day with a script supervisor. I used to apprentice people, and many times they would come to set with me, and after spending a day on set, they were like, whoa, I don't want to do this. I can't do this.
So they need to do a little research ahead of time.
I don't even want to work this many hours, you know? And so, you know, do a little research ahead of time. Make sure that's what you want to do before you make a commitment to it, because it is a big commitment, a life commitment, you know?
Right, right. And so do you have a favorite on-set moment? I know, it's hard to pick one. Now, you've been working on Breaking Bad recently.
Yes, my favorite show that I have ever worked on in my entire career.
Yeah.
And, you know, that would be, all the on-set moments are fun there.
Yeah.
It's just a great crew, it's a great cast, and great producers. It's really, and what makes it such a good experience for me is I feel truly valued and appreciated in my position as a professional, and I'm treated very professionally, and that makes it worth it.
That's great.
You know, it's just a wonderful.
Well, thank you again, Helen, for joining us. It's been great to have you and you sharing your experience, so thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Up my next, pleasure. We have John Armijo. He is going to give us a quick New Mexican film history lesson again. John, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Toby. Well, here's a quickie. Today I'll take us through a maze of notes and footnotes that I've been collecting for some time now. For example, did you know that in 1956, Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis's last film was filmed partially in New Mexico? The film was Hollywood or Bust, and it starred Anita Ekberg and Slapsy Maxie Rosenblum.
Say that twice.
He was a 1932 lightweight champion of the world. Filming took place in Santa Fe, Taos, and Taos Pueblo. In fact, it was the first film that was allowed to film at the Pueblo. And did you know it would be 14 years before the Pueblo would allow another feature to use it as a location? And this time it was Easy Rider in 1969. But guess what? Martin Lewis also made a film here in 1950. It was called My Friend Irma Goes West. The leading ladies in that one starred Marie Wilson and Corrine Calvet. Filming was done in Albuquerque at the Santa Fe Railroad Station and at the Alvarado Hotel and Harvey House. And here is a little-known fact. In 1962, NBC produced a TV series called Empire. This was the first time a complete series was shot in New Mexico. The locations they used were Story Lake near Las Vegas, Bonanza Creek Movie Town, the Eves Movie Ranch, Española, San Ildefonso Pueblo, and Santa Fe. The series starred Richard Egan, Ann Seymour, Terry Moore, Ryan O'Neill, Charles Bronson, and James Gregory. How's that for a lineup? And did you know that Ryan O'Neill made his TV debut in 1960 in The Many Lives of Dobie Gillis? Wonder how many remember that TV series. How's my time?
You're doing great, John.
Well, and listen to this. Empire was the only TV series in the 1962 fall television schedule filmed in color and on location. The series was such a hit that NBC released it as a feature in Europe under the title The Garretts. Here are some other television notes. In 1958, Walt Disney Studios shot one episode of The Nine Lives of El Fuego Baca at Ghost Ranch near Abiquiu and in Cerrillos and at Tezuque Pueblo. The narrator for the series was none other than Rex Allen, and it starred Robert Loggia as El Fuego. The episode premiered on the wonderful world of Disney in 1958 And it was also released as a feature film in Europe.
That's great, John. Thank you so much for
that. You bet.
And thanks again for joining us. And I think this is the perfect time to mention, because that was a lot of information, that if you'd like to listen to this cast again, please go to santafe.com, and past shows will be archived there in which you can re-listen. Again, you're listening to Talk 1260 KTRC, and I have one more announcement before we close out today. The Santa Fe, New Mexico Women in Film, I should say the New Mexico Women in Film in Santa Fe, will be an event on February the 1st is the Film and Media Day. However, the night before, we're January 31st, there's going to be a great panel, and the esteemed panelists include Senator Tim Keller, Representative Brian Egolf. We have Representative Al Park, Representative Sue Wilson Beffort, Alicia Keys from the producer from Blaze You Out, and Chad Burris from Mosquita Imari. It starts at 6 o'clock, and again, that's going actually, they changed locations. It's been moved to the state land office on the corner of Alameda and Old Santa Fe Trail. You can RSVP Laura Cunningham. For all the details, you can go to nmfilm.com. And look under our press releases and our bulletin board. Now, I should mention that it's a free event to New Mexico Women in Film members. However, it's $15 for non-members. And again, that's going to be January 31st, starting at 6 o'clock with a mix and mingle. And that's at the state land office on the corner of Alameda and Old Santa Fe Trail. And I didn't give you Laura's information. Her email is LauraCaroline@yahoo.com. So again, you've been listening to Talk 1260 KTRC. This is Toby Ives at New Mexico Filmworks. You can listen to this cast again at santafe.com, and thanks for joining us.